Blog Talk Radio.
You take the good, you take the bad, you take them both, and there you have the facts of life. The facts of life. There's a time you gotta go and show you're growing. Now you know about the facts of life. The facts of life.
Good evening and welcome to Voices for Justice. I'm your host, Michelle Bart, and tonight we sit down with a multi-talented woman millions have come to love and cherish, Gloria Loring. Have you ever been stuck in a confusion where a song came on the radio or a perfect person provided clarity you were seeking? Do you wonder why deeply painful issues keep coming back again and again? If you answered yes to these questions or you have other questions, Gloria will be taking your call shortly. The call-in number is 917-932-8962. The chat room is also open. If you log on to blogtalkradio.com/NWCAVE and click tonight's show, you'll get into the chat room with us. Voices for Justice is a show of our national organization, the National Women's Coalition Against Violence and Exploitation. The show highlights those making a difference in our world and making our world a better place to live through media, community, or just by having a voice and lending a helping hand. Learn more about us by visiting nwcav.org. But one of these people is our special guest this evening. Someone I loved watching for 6 years on Days of Our Lives, where she played Liz Chandler. Someone who's been writing and singing for many, many years on the intros such as The Facts of Life or other shows like Different Strokes. Many songs we've come to love over the years, like Friends and Lovers. To learn more about Gloria, please visit her website at GloriaLoring.com. For now, I want to have you listen to an interview with New York's WPIX PIX 11 on CW Network to hear a little bit more about what we're going to be speaking with Gloria about tonight.
So it's no coincidence that her career has spanned decades, including the number one hit song, remember this, Friends and Lovers. Yes, yeah. She also co-composed, of course, the theme song to Different Strokes, Facts of Life. Well, she has a new spiritual autobiography out. Take a look.
I call it evidence-based living. You have to look at the evidence that comes into your life, because the spiritual realms can be very, you know, ethereal and very mysterious and all of that.
Actress and singer Gloria Loring is opening up about her private life in a new spiritual autobiography, 12 years in the making. Coincidence is God's way of remaining anonymous.
We have these antenna, we have this guidance system that's always in attendance to our lives. And it's our opportunity to pay attention. What's being fed back?
The former Days of Our Lives star talks about the coincidences that came into her life.
When I secretly asked my husband, Alan Thick, the writer and actor, for a separation, within a couple of weeks, a woman from Nebraska that I had met like once, briefly at a book signing, started sending me letters of comfort. And I called her and I said, "Shirley, you never told me how these letters started." And she said, "Actually, I was on my way to Bible study and a voice said to me, you must tell Gloria that I love her and she's not to worry."
Another coincidence occurred when a dream of her returning to music was followed up the next day with a producer of the soap opera handing her a song called Friends and Lovers.
And I'll be your lover.
Everything I had daydreamed came to fruition and I had a number one hit.
Lost without you.
Her son, R&B star Robin Thicke, inherited the singing gene.
By the time he was 12 or 13, he had an idea formed in his head. And just like I was going to be a singer, Robin said, saw me on stage in an Australian concert tour I did, and he said, "Oh, that's what I'm going to do."
Now Loring is pairing her love of music along with her new book.
As I was writing the stories, these songs started to come out, and I started to write the songs, and I realized, of course, this CD has all the songs that attend each of the chapters.
And each of those chapters is looking to inspire others.
So I knew that there was a hook here to help people to start to see how things come into their lives and how they can use it for their own good.
So it's no coincidence that her career, it spanned decades, including the number one hit song, remember this, Friends and Lovers.
Welcome to the show, Gloria. Good evening.
Thank you so much, Michelle. Oh, my goodness. I had fun doing that interview, too, and they did such a good job editing it together.
It was fabulous. It was great. And, you know, I could sit here and read your wonderful bio and your entire resume, but that would take many, many years. So that clip was perfect.
Living it was much more fun than reading it.
I liked the video on the bus. It was great. It was great.
Yeah, I know.
You know,
fun.
Doing my research on you and for this show this evening, I learned that you once told Soaps.com in an interview that sometimes what we are running from has a great message for us. So let's talk a little bit about the book, a lot about the book, Coincidence is God's Way of Remaining Anonymous, which is a quote from Albert Einstein. The book is a compelling journey into the show business, your life, mystery, and miracles. So was it difficult writing a book, and what were you actually running from something that led you to making this wonderful book?
I think rather there was a time when I was running from. Sure, I was running from the pain within me. That's probably what prompted me to be a singer and a performer, is an inner sense of self that was somewhat dented and bruised. And I wanted to be special. I wanted to be beautiful. And so I could sing. And when I sang, people applauded. And so I found this way to present myself as beautiful and fabulous and talented. And I worked at it, and I achieved it. But there were things inside me that, of course, that wonderful little phrase, wherever you go, there you are. Everywhere I went, I took the pain with me. And there reached a point at which the pain was so powerful that I remember standing in the middle of my bedroom sobbing, saying, there's no one, I'm all alone, there's nowhere. And I thought, there was a part of me that heard my voice, that heard this great pain coming out of me, and it actually was coming out of me in kind of a high registered child's voice. There's no one. It was up there. And there was another part of my consciousness, my being, that heard this little girl's voice. And that reasonable part of me said, well, wait a minute. There are people I can call. What is this about? And I unfold in the book the esoteric journey that I went on to find out what that pain was about, that I'm all alone. There's no one. There's nothing. And it was linked back to what I call an inappropriately sexualized contact with my father. I detail it in the book. You know, the fascinating thing about abuse, and I've heard this through the years, and of course you're dealing with this in the most horrific circumstances, people being kidnapped and sold, and I mean young women, and unbelievable, incredible, and yet ultimately, any time one person uses another's most intimate and vulnerable sensibilities for their own gratification, it is very powerfully damaging. Even if it only happens once, if it happens over a long period of time, I think the more it happens, of course, the more difficult it is to recover from. But the thing that was interesting is, remember talking to someone about this issue and them saying, oh, well, my father didn't, you know, it's not like he burned me with cigarettes or he this or he that, or he, you know, they were kind of dismissing their pain. And I remember talking to a psychiatrist in preparing to talk about this. Writing about it was one thing, by the way. Talking about it on the Dr. Drew show, et cetera, was a whole other issue. She said, it's not what somebody did to you that defines abuse as much as the effect it has on you. And I never thought of it that way. You know, depending on your... Some people have things happen, and somehow they pick themselves up there, and it's still abuse, but it doesn't seem to knock them down for such a long time. And maybe it's the support system around them, maybe it's the resources within them that were built up earlier in life or they brought in with them. But ultimately, abuse is about how it, this thing that happened, impacts our, and I use the word spirit. And by spirit, you know, sometimes people get a little freaked out by that word, like it's a little too airy-fairy. But your spirit is your essential energy that's in your body, your enthusiasm for life, your willingness to be in the world, your sense of adventure. Is the world a cool place, an adventurous place, or is it a dangerous, dark, scary, I have to be hypervigilant all the time? And, you know, just even one circumstance of this kind of damage to a person's spirit can impact them their whole lives. And sometimes and I've done an awful lot of reading because I've been in a friendship with a dear friend who was brutally abused for many, many years as a child. And in being open about my own circumstance, which as far as I know it was only that one time, it could have been more, but the important thing was I did the healing work I needed to do. In my small circumstance compared to her years of brutal abuse, I felt so inadequate to be of service to her in witnessing her trauma. And so I did a lot of reading. I read Alice Miller, one of the preeminent child psychologists and advocates for children who have been neglected and abused. And that was really eye-opening. She has a number of books. One is called Free from Lies. We tell ourselves this lie that it didn't hurt that much. I'm okay now. That was a long time ago. No, it doesn't have anything to do with me now. And yet then we find ourselves continuing to get into abusive or destructive or neglectful, at very least neglectful, relationships. Or find ourselves going through very dark times or flashbacks or nightmares or times when we have to shut the door and hide for 2-3 days at a time and pull the covers and want the world to go away. Or we find ourselves contemplating suicide. Well, I'm not worth anything. What's the point? I'm not worth anything. Those are the kinds of thoughts that used to go through my head. Now, you have to understand the irony of that. Here I was, you know, I was a star. You know, I'm a television star.
You actually mention in the book when you were a teenager in high school, you were elected homecoming princess and most talented, and yet that surprised you. What?
Yeah, because I didn't see myself. It was surprising. I mean, I wanted to be. I strived to be. But I was so unconscious of myself in relationship to other people because there was a whole part of me that was shut off from that. And yet I was outwardly friendly. I mean, there was two things. There was that hidden. It's like, who is it that compares it to that? It's like a room locked away within us. And we put all the ugly stuff in the room. And then we go out in the world, and we're just terrific, and we do, and we are,
playing the
and
part.
We achieve, and we do the mask and the role, and we're good at the role. And the role is good. That's good. Thank God we have the role to play. But then suddenly it's like when either the role is taken away from us or we have to change roles, and now we're left there sitting with ourselves, with that inner self, just like, woo, without the trappings of outward glory. What do I think of myself if I don't have as much money as I want, or if I don't have the... I mean, I went through that. I cried every day for 4 months. I describe it in the book. I came back from Australia from my fourth concert tour. I had had 2 miscarriages with my new husband, Christopher, at the time, in a period of 4 months, 4.5 months. And no matter what happened, I got up the very next minute as soon as I could and went right on and took care of everybody and did everything that needed to be done. And then all of a sudden I came home and I had no work booked. My new record that I had recorded as a follow-up to Friends and Lovers was basically, even though it had some wonderful music on it, which people in the record company said we had 4 hit singles on that, didn't matter. The powers that be decided, yeah, we're done with this. You know, it was out for about a month, and okay, you couldn't find it anywhere. It was nowhere. So all of this hit me, as I say in the book, like a board upside the head. I had no work booked. I had my record thrown away. I'd worked on it for 2 years with the brilliant George Duke. It was the best singing I'd ever done. I'd had 2 miscarriages. I mean, all this stuff was, all these losses. And then I realized in the midst of that, that the reason I sang was to make people love me. And I started to think, well, that's not a good enough reason anymore. You know, it's like if you have a job and you have to achieve and do and whatever, whatever, and then suddenly you look around and you say, the job, I really don't like doing this. But then what do I like? Well, that's where I was. If I'm not
you said
singer,
it took you about, I'm sorry, you said it took you about 10 years to research and such, and in the book you write, the greatest gift of coincidence has been knowing the best benefit of choosing love over fear. Obviously, writing a book of this nature, a memoir, with sharing, and I have to say, you know, going through it's over 200 pages, and going through it to find information for this show tonight, I was compelled, especially between chapters 7 and 10, how you actually, you describe, you don't just talk about your journey, you describe in detail some of the memories, like what Robert was pulling out of you and things of that nature. And
yeah, Robert
I would
was a
think,
psychologist, so people understand, yeah.
yes, Robert's a psychologist and obviously a good one, to be able to protect you, but also, you know, also mend you. And for him to be able to bring all that to light and you to write about it, there had to have been some kind of a fear revealing all of this. Did you speak with your family before you started to decide to make this and your whole journey and your whole life, including Alan Thicke, your ex-husband and your children and things of that nature, where, you know, you decided to talk about it openly in a book?
You know what, my purpose of the book was not to reveal or point fingers or blame. My purpose of the book was to describe the benevolent goodness that exists in our lives, that can take us from trauma to triumph, that can heal our hearts. That was the purpose. If my purpose had been to point fingers or blame, I don't even know if I would have asked permission then. But I didn't feel I needed permission to tell my story. I was very cognizant as I told my story of the things that I was willing to reveal and how I would reveal them, in ways that you know, my sons would not feel like, you know, I was, you know, doing a Playboy centerfold as far as my inner life was concerned. The only person who read the book, my parents both passed around the time that I was beginning the book. They passed within 2.5 months of each other, even though they hadn't been together for almost 30 years. But the only person I told and read the chapters you're talking about the revelations of the sexual contact, etc., was my sister Peggy. I could tell her the truth, and she was the person that I quote in the book as asking me, well, why do we have to share our family shame?
That was her.
And I said, you know what? I don't think it is a shame on the whole family. I think that there's been enough shame. And when we bring shame into the light, it loses its power to overwhelm us. When we tell the truth, you know, you bring any darkness into the light and it dissipates. And it's time in this increasingly connected world for us to know that it is all right to tell in appropriate, gentle ways our own version of the truth, at least to one other person. You know, when you're in a position of public celebrity, many of us do feel an enormous responsibility. Sometimes we lose our way, of course, but we do feel a responsibility very often, inspired by our fans, to be even more the person they might think we are, strong and courageous and whatever. And I felt my healing process was so extraordinary, and it was my healing process. Robert is not, you know, it's not like I'm telling everybody, oh, call Robert, you know. The whole point is that coincidence itself led me to exactly the right person for me, who helped me go into that inner space, that spirit, that energy field, that kinesthetic memory, and process it, bring it into the light. And he said an interesting thing. He said, what I do is I unblock the dam. It's like the feelings and the energy of us has been dammed up, like a beaver went in there and built a huge dam, you know. And he unblocks the flow so we can open that closed room that has not been ours, that whole portion of ourselves that we haven't dared reveal anywhere. It's very, very important when we've had this kind of trauma to have one, Alice Miller calls a compassionate witness, someone who can take our part, who can say, yeah, you should be angry. Yes, yes, I understand why you're crying. Yes, that was terrible. Yes, I understand that you may feel you may never forgive. And that's okay to feel that now. You'll move through that, or you know what I mean? Just to be with the person and say, yes, you are entitled to your feelings. I have an acquaintance. She doesn't let anybody close at all. She's just about 50 years old now. She has never learned to. She's kept herself like a child. She walks 8 to 9 miles a day. That's what she does. She walks. And she takes numerous baths. She's on heavy medication. And she was abused by 2 stepfathers. And her mother, when she told her mother, seeking some solace, some comfort, the mother said, yeah, I thought something like that was happening. Okay, well, let's go down to Target and go shopping. That was it.
So this particular friend that you have,
yeah,
obviously
she's never
her
healed.
Past has not, she's not confronted or been able to heal from the past.
At all.
What kind?
Once she told that one person and got that response, she said, oh, well, it is all my fault. And she has accepted that as the truth. And so she, you know, is regularly threatening suicide. She's, I mean, people have tried to help. She shoves everybody away. She's tried some therapy. The pain is so great. The self-hatred, the self-rage is so great. And, of course, none of it is needed. None of it is true. You know, it is the lie we tell ourselves. Oh, somehow I caused this person to, what, kidnap me, rape me, keep me in a room, do, you know, this tendency for us to take blame where there should be none is so deeply wounding. It's what I call adding insult on top of injury. The injury is already there, the abuse, the neglect. And then on top of that, we insult ourselves by saying, oh, I deserved that. No, no one deserves that. No one deserves that pain. No, never, never, never.
You know, also in your book, I want to also let our, we have a couple callers. The call-in number is 917-932-8962. And if you're calling in, please press the prompt that you want to ask a question. Otherwise, I'm going to just think you're listening to the show. So for those couple callers in the on the online, please do that. In your book, you know, I want to let our listeners know that haven't had the opportunity, you can go to GloriaLoring.com to order the book. You mentioned, and I think, you know, you started saying about, you know, you're on stage, you're feeling great. When the phone calls stop, you know, you kind of crash and burn. And we see that a lot, of, especially recently, of actors that aren't getting those phone calls that tend to do the DUIs or their arrests and things of that nature.
Yeah.
And we can only think that those individuals haven't faced their fears. But you brought up some good points that I want to ask you as an actress and someone in the spotlight. We have seen in the last 5 years numerous amounts of individuals that have come out with their stories, whether they're top of their game like you are, or individuals that are trying to make a comeback, write a book, or individuals like Cheryl Burke from Dancing with the Stars. And I think the perception of a lot of individuals out there that follow the celebrity persona or the follow the celebrities and want to be like them believe that you all come from glitz and glamour as a child and all of that. And in
yes.
fact, you point out, so then they expect you to be used to it, so they don't expect, you know, the celebrities to be able to live, you know, reality and fall on tough ground either. And I think the perception is based on because of media and things that people present there for different individuals in Hollywood. But you write in your book and you detail it. You don't just say my dad, my mom. You actually pinpoint who they are and their faults at times. Like you described your dad as, first of all, they divorced when you were 15, and
mm-hmm.
when you were 15, that was taboo. You just did not talk about anything that happened in a bedroom. You just never talked about anything that happened in your home, or
let me make
divorcing.
Yeah, yeah, but let me make clear also for people who are listening who have not read the book yet that when I was 15, I had no cognitive memory of what happened to me when my father was drunk when I was 3. That memory came back much later on, and there were some people who said to me, oh, well, maybe it wasn't true. You know, you were 3, and... But I've talked to, again, some very good psychologists and psychiatrists who do this kind of work with people and say, although you may not have a cognitive memory that, you know, you can say, oh, I remember the night when I was 3, what you have is you have kinesthetic memory. You have the smell. When Robert, as you know, in that chapter, and I describe how he took me back into long ago through the breath. And by the way, the word for breath in Aramaic, the language that Jesus spoke, is the same word for spirit. Spirit and breath are linked. And so he does, through very fast breathing, he takes you back into these earlier understandings and experiences. Everything that's ever happened to us is buried in our body. If we can go deeply enough and get the present mind, you know, quieted down, we can remember an awful lot of stuff. That's why hypnosis works so well, because we put the present mind aside and go back into these deep memories. So when my parents got divorced at 3, I had no remembrance of what happened to me when I was 3. So anyway, sorry, but I wanted that to be clear to people. My dad was in my bedroom yesterday and I'm going to pretend it didn't happen. I didn't know. I didn't know till I was in my 40s.
You blocked it out. And
I blocked it out.
Sharing my own story, I had been raped in Colorado on October 31st of 1992. And I really didn't think anything about it either until my best friend, all of a sudden her 10-year-old was going through something with her stepfather. And all of a sudden,
God,
I started having memories, and I till this day, I still can't listen to Atlantic Star because it was on the radio at the time of the event.
Of course.
So
you have that association with that music, and
definitely.
If I'm near someone who smells like alcoholic, you know, like they've been drinking days and days and days, I get sick to my stomach from it. And, of course, that's my I remember the smell from when I was 3. And I remember parts of my body going numb where he was lying on me. You know, so these memories are there. So, yeah, you have your own particular kinesthetic memory that you have, yeah.
I was really never able to sell it. I mean, I spent 17 years in Los Angeles and never could enjoy Halloween, didn't want anything to do with it. And it wasn't until 6 years ago when my niece was born on Halloween that I was able to just, you know, deal with what happened in 92 and be able to say, this is a coincidence of, you know, God's way of, you know, remaining anonymous, that my beautiful niece came into the world on the same day that was very dark for me. So I totally get what you're saying.
Wow, isn't that beautiful? That's a
beautiful
thing.
And I told you when we talked that, you know, I had to read part of the book in order to get a grasp at what to ask you. And I started reading it saying, oh, my goodness. Because when I was introduced to the fact that you came out with a book, the one thing that I was told was, she was abused by her father at a young age. She came out with a book. Take a look. And so knowing who you were, I said, okay, I'll take a look. First thing out of my mind, my mouth was, let's book her for the conference, because this is totally, this is a great example of 40 years that if only things had happened differently, you might have been able to talk about that. And in your case, it worked out, whereas many people like your friend, because of what transpired with her, you know, she's neglecting her future. And it's a sad thing. It's a very sad thing.
And she's neglecting her present also.
Her present.
Yeah, hides from everybody. Yeah, but I mean, again, that impulse toward healing is within some of us, and some of us never quite can find it strongly enough, and that's just, it's such a shame. So that's why I do think that the work that you're doing, that or you're telling your truth, my telling my truth, is so important. It gives people permission to look at what's in that closet, in that room that's been shut away for so long. And it is painful. A friend of mine, the friend who was abused for so long and will not go back and heal that stuff, and is right now dying of cancer, mostly because of it. And I said to her, she said, why would I go back and do that? I said, because once you do it, it will stop running your life. She just couldn't understand that. I said, please,
do you
I've been
of
there.
What's
I've done it.
Running her life?
What is running her life? Yeah, is the fear and the self-hatred and the, you know, all those things that are subconsciously, like subterranean.
Do you think it's preventing her from fighting the war that she's going through with cancer?
Oh, yeah, yeah, no, I know, yeah. That's a long and big story, but yeah.
Yeah, so, yeah.
I mean, it's a vicious cycle. But I've watched this now with quite a number of people and people who have gone toward healing and said, no, enough, I am not going to do this anymore. And it was at one point where a voice inside my head said something to me that was so nasty. And I started sobbing and I said, who is that? What is that? And I decided in that moment I wanted to find out what was that ugliness within me that would be so mean to me. What was that voice within me, that negative critic? And it was quite a bit of a journey. You know, it was a from that point until, let me think, that was, oh, I can't even, five, six, it was about 7-8 years before that healing, the healing path was traveled during that time. And, of course, you know, the healing goes on all the time. I mean, I am... with the spiritual study, you know, there's a reason that the one perspective, the one virtuous quote that comes up again and again and again in all the world's religions are, do not do to someone else what you would not have done to you, or do unto others as you would have them do. In other words, the golden rule. And then we hear from certain spiritual masters and sages and saints that there in truth is only one of us. And, you know, when we hate ourselves, we cut ourselves off from the rest of the world in some ways, because we can't share the true beauty of our spirit because we've lost touch with it. We've forgotten who we are. We think we're dark and demented and wounded and bruised, but there is within every single one of us a shining, what is it, Saint Teresa called it like a shining castle. And she said the king lives there. She meant the Lord, you know, God. And, but just think of it as the highest human experience. You don't have to go to the religious viewpoint, but it does have a big vision for us. The highest human potential lives within every single one of us. And no matter what's happened to you, if you're listening to this, there is a part of you that nothing has ever touched. Nothing has ever bruised. Nothing has ever wounded. There is an original self. You could call it your soul. You could call it your spirit. Whatever you want to call it. But it does exist within you. There is a core of perfection and beauty that has never been damaged, no matter what happens. And it was when people are willing to find that essential being within them and come back to their true selves that they can bring themselves into who they truly are and have always been, no matter what happened to them, no matter what anybody said or did or tried to do. The problem is very often we live in this world of physicality, of material evidence, and we think that once a certain thing is happened, I'm ruined forever. And of course, you know, I mean, that in many parts of the world is still the viewpoint of a woman, that if a certain thing happens to a woman, she is ruined and she might as well be dead. And so we have picked this up culturally and we have forgotten who we are. We are not that thing that happened to us. We are not that nasty, misled, misguided being who wounded us. We are not that. We are our original true selves. And it is a process of shedding and letting go. That's why, of course, forgiveness is so important, because it's not just forgiving the other person, it's also forgiving ourselves for having been vulnerable, for having been there, wherever there was. Whether it was, you know, coming out of a bar at 2 in the morning with some friends and you turn the corner to go to your car and boom, you know, I shouldn't have been there. I shouldn't have been having fun with your friends. You know what I mean? I shouldn't have gone to that party. I shouldn't have this. It's forgiveness is really an important process, which is why I wrote that song, A Song of My Father. And that I every chapter of my book has a song associated with it, all of which are on a separate CD called Turn the Page.
I was going to ask you about that, because I did print out the song and I looked for it because I was going to open with that, and I couldn't find it anywhere except
iTunes. Yeah, it's iTunes. Yeah, it was. Oh, yeah, all you had to do was ask me. Honey, I would have sent it to you.
I know.
Yes, it's downloadable.
The words
on
are
iTunes.
Great. It's in the middle of the book. We're going to actually end tonight's show. The reason I asked you in regards to the other song, You Always Knew, you know, that song, I have played it so much. If we still had vinyl, it would be warped. Because that song is just beautiful, and not only does it resonate with myself, it also stands for everything that our organization believes in. And so, I was glad that you had indicated, you know, if there was anyone you've ever shared your history with, anyone that you've ever walked this life with, you know, thank you for always knowing. And so we're going to end the show tonight with that song. So if you have to go, make sure you download the podcast and share it, because it's a beautiful song. And again, you can find out more about Gloria, where you can get her book, her albums, GloriaLoring.com. The call-in number is 917-932-8962. And if you are calling, please raise your hand so I know that you have a question. But in your book, you describe in detail your life, your marriages. I love the analogy you used for Alan. Alan and I see each other at family gatherings and are mostly like two pillows that have shared the same sofa for a long time. What a great way to an analogy of describing. But you do call him on a regular basis just to say hi, and you, like you said, this book was about you.
Well, I don't call him as much now, because he's been married for quite a while to a very strong lady. But we do see each other. There was a while there when he was between marriages, and I called him on one of, I think, our what would have been our 25th wedding anniversary, and I wished him happy 25th wedding, and we commiserated about that, and. You know, he was
and that's
a great.
Healthy. That I think that's
healthy.
That's
very
for,
healthy. Oh
for
yeah,
both,
he was
both
a great
involved.
Person for me to be married to. He was so demanding and so hard on himself and everyone around him that everything had to be perfect. And I was so sort of, oh, whatever, la di da di da di da. So in order to get along with him, I had to step up my game. He was always productive and making things happen and initiating projects, and I was always waiting to see what life threw my direction. And so I learned so much from being married to him. And somebody said, you don't tell us in the book why you two separated. And I said, well, you know, the marriage was over. My need to be with him in those ways, I tried to get him to change, but he is who he is. And, you know, there are people who come into our lives, and I call them the angels of adversity. Although not everything with him was adverse. We had wonderful times, and we have two fabulous sons and grandchildren that we share. But in other words, people who push us and prompt us and create obstacles for us so that we have to get ourselves up off our butts and say, you know what, I'm not going to take this, or I'm not going to sit here any longer, or I'm going to prove somebody who says, you can't do that. And you say, Well, darn it, yes, I can. I'm going to show you. So we call these people into our lives, and that's the coincidence part, the coinciding of meaningful events and people. And then sometimes our need to be with them, we've learned everything we can learn together. And the relationship has run its course, and it's done. It's completed. I remember my darling friend Valerie Harper, and I assume she is still with us, even though I know she is tragically sick. But I remember her saying when she got divorced from Richard Schall, her husband, and they said, "Aren't you sad that your marriage failed?" And she said, "No, it didn't fail. It succeeded. Oh, we had a wonderful time together, and then it was done."
That
you
sounds
know?
Like something she'd say.
Isn't that? That is my Val. She was, we were friends pretty close. I mean, I saw her. She was in my home a lot. We did things together. We went places together and for about 6 or 7 years. And her joy in living and her joy and her perspective was just the most wonderful upliftment to my life. So anyway, yeah. I mean, you know, people come into our lives and they serve a purpose. I mean, I explain in the book that I was taken back by Dr. Brian Weiss into a past life regression through a series of coincidences of events that suddenly I was asked if I would want to be regressed on television. I went, oh, okay. And I had a dream about burning to death, and I know what it's like to burn to death now. So they said, well, that sounds pretty profound. And Dr. Brian Weiss took me back, and I experienced during that regression that I had chosen my mother and my father, that I chose to be with them. Well, that means that I chose those lessons. And what were those lessons? And what I got from my regression with him was that most of all, I came here to learn how to love. And perhaps first of all, I came here to learn how to love myself, so that out of the wellspring of love within myself, I could love and accept others.
And you also state that perhaps telling your story will help another woman also tell her truth and move beyond the grasp. And I think we've spoke about that with your friend that's going through the situation she is. You know, and
yeah, I've
I
had a
I
would number of people come into my life who have been abused and either didn't know it or hadn't faced it, and suddenly they're confessing it to me. Well, hello, coincidence, there it is. We're a participant in the unfolding of the people who are attracted to us and the people we're attracted to. So if we don't like where our life is going, we have to look at ourselves instead of blame the mirror. It says clean your own face instead
That's
of
right.
blaming the mirror. It's not the other person's fault. And by fault, I mean it's a responsibility for us to see what am I doing to participate in bringing people who negate me in some way? Is there a deep reason? Is there something that happened in my childhood, something that happened long ago that perhaps I haven't faced yet? Perhaps I don't even know about it like I did, as I didn't, you know?
You also say perhaps this book will in some coincidental way be just the evidence you need to begin watching more closely what you are attracting and what you are running from. And
yes.
I would have to say coincidentally, I can see some points, whether it's in my personal or professional life, to after reading this book and seeing the quotes throughout this book and the songs and the lyrics that you have throughout the book, are wonderful. I mean, the quotes themselves
you.
Are just fabulous. And I'll be the first to tell you, I'm not an avid reader. I've been a media consultant over 20 years, and when you read constantly for work, the last thing you want to do is snuggle up and read a book. And tell you, we've had a lot of authors on this show over the course of the last 3 years, and even my good friend Jane Velez Mitchell, we've had her on a couple times, and her books are just very compelling. And this book of yours, very compelling. And I think reading it And I promise I am going to read the entire book because I'm just taken, and I want to read because I know our listeners, we're an anti-violence organization, and so
yeah.
many of our listeners have been sexually abused or they
yeah.
have been domestically abused, and I want to also give a couple phone numbers for those that aren't in the chat room. The Rape, Abuse, and Incest National Network hotline number, RAIN, is 800-656-HOPE. And, of course, if you're being abused or you know someone, our biggest campaign right now is supporting the You See Something, Say Something campaign. The Child Help National Child Abuse Hotline is 1-800-4-A-CHILD. And the National Domestic Violence Hotline is 1-800-799-SAFE. And, of course, we always give the Human Trafficking Hotline number, and that's 888-373-7888. But, of course, always call 911 if you need help immediately.
Immediately, absolutely.
Definitely. And I want to just pick a few words out of page 154 and 155 because – again, most people, when you read a book on someone's experience with their father, and we're going to, for our listeners, jump to chapter 9 of the book, and the title of the chapter is Deep Secrets, and many people talk about the dark secrets, but this was very deeply rooted in you where you had to pull it out in order to remember. Is that correct?
Yes, yes, because again, this was precognition. This was at 3, and also the mind is very benevolent in the way it tries to protect us from things that are just too difficult to process. That's why people go into comas when the body is just completely overburdened, and that's why the mind goes into a kind of blackout. It's too much to deal with, and so yes, it was very early on.
Well, you know, in one breath, you're talking about your father, who you love and loved very dearly. He was your father. You describe him, again, as I stated in the intro, a hookah-smoking jazz musician and salesman who introduced me to positive thought of prayer, affirmative prayer and optimal nutrition. He was
yes.
funny, creative, and occasionally brilliant. His mother died when he was 5 and left him with his father. He and his brother drank themselves to alcoholism. So you're stating the father you knew to the father of, you know, he obviously has been drinking, had been drinking most of his entire life. And we know, all the listeners listening all know that any kind of abuse towards another person when added with some kind of abuse of alcoholism or drugs only fuels whatever is happening.
But
then you jump into an other part where you're, you know, why would I want to tell my father? What would I tell my father? That my, you know, then you go in and you describe as a 3-year-old what you've remembered of your father and the smell of stale alcohol and the fact that he was so heavy on you on the bed, and you actually go into it all. And I think that's very compelling to someone that's reading it, and I have to say, anyone listening that hasn't gotten the book, to definitely pick a copy up, especially if you're on that fence post of not knowing if you should talk to somebody or not, or you think you can handle it, or you're living with someone that's an alcoholic, you need to know.
Yeah, don't do it alone, I would say.
Don't do it alone.
You won't get anywhere confronting someone alone or trying to deal with this by yourself. You really need someone who's very skillful, who's very compassionate. Yeah,
what
that would
do you
be
think
my
you
my
did not confront your father? And,
well,
and
first
do you
of all,
think
he
ever
a,
did
yeah,
it
at,
to anyone
at that
else?
Point, he, well, because I have no so-called proof.
Okay.
As far as I say, actually, I have it in front of me. What was I going to tell him? That I had an energetic memory of him falling in bed on top of me with an erection? Plus, you know, I know from my father's, from stories that he told me when he was on the road as a musician, that he once had a blackout that lasted 2 weeks.
Oh my
he
goodness.
Was in one city playing with the band, and the next thing he knew, he was in the next town, he said in Detroit, and he turned to the guy next to him and said, I thought we were in Detroit 2 weeks from now. And he said, "What, weren't we in you know, San Antonio yesterday?" And he said, "No, Buzz, that was 2 weeks ago. You don't remember the last 2 weeks?" So, you know, alcohol does terrible things to people's brain, especially if they drink consistently. Drugs do the same thing. Very often, drugs, alcohol, these sorts of, you know, crutches, take us out of ourselves. We lose track with who we are as a human being and who the other person is. Rage is also a crutch that brings us out of our true selves. And you know, we go into kind of a state of insanity. You know, I forgive my father. I really do. And actually, I'd love to, because I know we're just about out of time. I would love to really quickly, because I have heard from people that my song, Song of My Father, is sometimes played at Al-Anon meetings. I want to just read. Yeah, it is. I want to just read the lyrics because it is like a poem. And
Take
I wrote it in one fell swoop. I wanted you to be my hero. I saw the way we were as law. But the rules were always changing. I learned that trusting was a flaw. So I accepted consolations, set my soul in compromise, gave up to others' expectations, and never looked inside my eyes. And I staked my life on the music. I put my heart to the pen and tried not to dance to the same old tune again and again and again. And with all that we've been through, I do love you.
It's beautiful. Would you like to finish it?
You want me to read the rest of it? There's another
verse. Yeah, it's beautiful. It's beautiful. We're good for time.
Oh, we are? Okay. I didn't know if you were running out of time. There are bonds that can't be broken. There's the truth of who we are. We share a family heirloom. Your wound became my scar. And it toughens my defenses. But it's not my destiny. For my life's been marked by miracles. One of them is you and me. And I stake my life on the music. I put my heart to the pen and try not to dance to the same old tune again and again and again. And because of all that we've been through, I do love you. I do love you.
I think it's a beautiful song.
Thank you.
And I did hear it on iTunes and the internet, and it's just it's beautiful because your survivor, whether or not you know, you feel that way, I see you as a survivor. And,
we all are. Believe me, we have all suffered. You know, some of us have deeper wounds and bigger wounds than others, but we've all survived. You know, the boy who pulled our pigtails, or the kid who threw a rock at our head, or pushed us off a bicycle, or a parent who didn't know what in the world they were doing, or a parent who was actively raging, or you know, an uncle who did something that shouldn't happen, and we're all survivors.
I believe that too. I truly believe that. But you don't normally hear survivors, especially ones towards parents. They always say, "I'll always love him. He's my father." But you would not necessarily see a beautiful song like that written for someone that, you know, in a lot of people's minds, took their childhood. And like you say in the book,
yes,
throughout,
no, I know.
It's everybody's different of how you cope with things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm different versus my mom is different versus
yep.
you. And the survivors, you know, even like with the trafficking and kidnap survivors, prior to moving to the Pacific Northwest, I had never actually met a human trafficked survivor, although I did a human trafficking conference out in Irwindale. I had never met an actual survivor until I moved here. And once you meet a survivor, they're all in a different place. And
that's why everybody's a survivor in their own way. Absolutely.
Everyone's a survivor in their own way. And I really, again, urge anyone listening to pick up a copy of this book. And I can promise, although January won't work out, we'll get you to an event because
I think
it's important.
That.
Because your book is so compelling. You do go through the journey. I think a lot of people, we were watching Half the Sky from Nicholas Kristof last night. And,
oh, yes.
And in my role, I see so many people say, well, you know, they're only doing it for the PR. They're only doing it for this. In my role as a consultant, though, I believe that those of you, like yourself and many others, that put their name out there for a cause, like human trafficking, sexual abuse, molestation, whatever the cause is, if they're doing it with the right agenda, the point is, without a face that everyone knows, like the Gloria Lorings of the world,
yeah.
a lot of people, especially on human trafficking, people would not understand the significance of the problem. And so
yeah.
I commend folks like yourself and the Cheryl Burks and others, the Janice Higgins and folks out there that come out with their stories knowing that you might offend somebody in your own life, but it doesn't matter. It's about you. And I think you made that clear not only in the book but on the show today. It was about
yeah.
you, and it wasn't about coming out and blaming anyone. And I believe, I learned a lot on Buddhism and things of that nature when I lived in California, and I truly believe that if you use all that aggression and all that hate and all of that energy on holding grudges and being upset at the world and being upset at people that did you wrong, you are only using energy that could make a difference in the world.
And also make a difference in your own life. That's why, that's why forgiveness is so important. Not so much for the person you're forgiving. It's important for you. It's important so that you get that rage and grief and whatever it takes to get that out and then turn, because it is energy. You know, the same energy that creates rage and grief can create inspiration, and, you know, the feelings have to be dealt with and turned from what happened then to what can be now, what the truth of me is now. And I've seen some of those incredible Half the Sky, and I mean, some of those women who have been through such torture and the things they are now doing and the courage they have is just mind-boggling to me. I'm awed to even, you know, I would be awed to be in the same room with them. So, I think this work that you're doing and your organization and all of us who are just telling the truth about how harming those things are, I just think it's so wonderful that we can be involved in this work.
Do you know that so many of the victims and survivors of human trafficking and kidnap and abductions and things of that nature, somehow, so many of them were sexually abused as children?
Yeah.
And that doesn't come out until all of a sudden, you know, they're on the road to recovery and mending their broken heart and learning how to live again, that they start to talk about that. And
mm-hmm.
you know, your story, I believe, is a prevention. You know, people should learn from this book and be able to read it for wherever they are in their life, but it gives you a sense of, you know, yeah, she's this celebrity. Yeah, your son is Robin Thicke, and you were married to Alan, and you were Liz on Days of Our Lives. But ironically, putting this show together, I was looking at it, well, wait, she wrote The Facts of Life, Different Strokes. You were on Days of Our Lives. All those titles actually are saying something about the road to which you took to get to your book. You know, and when you think of the titles of all those songs, they're about life.
Yes, they are. Yeah, and, yeah. We write what we know. So I want to mention also before we finish up now that my book is available for a downloadable as an audiobook on Audible.com. Audible.com. And for those who like to, they can put it on their smartphone. And just if, you know, they're driving around, have the headphones in, and I read my own book, and also there are pieces of the music that the songs that begin each chapter are on this version, too, with my reading the book. So I do recommend that. I've got a couple people who've gotten the book and my reading it and say, oh, my God, that is so powerful. So I'm really excited to know that. And so for people who aren't big readers, this is another way they can access what I've written.
Audible.com.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And again, your website is GloriaLoring.com. And before we end, do you have, you know, as I was telling you about our previous show, My Privates Are Private with Stacey Honowitz, we had no callers on that call. And and you never know how many people will listen to it. But when you're going over 4,000 downloads, it's incredible. That's the most we've had on any show other than Kaylee Anthony. And for us, it's like that's 4,000 people that wanted to hear what Stacey had to say. And My Privates Are Private, even if it's an offender, you know, they're listening to it. And that's what counts. And so we urge everybody to download this podcast and listen to it because Gloria's story is glorious. You know, she went from survivor to song, and I think it's very important that folks hear your story because, again, unless I asked you on this show, most likely, we would have gotten you at the conference and I would have read the book then. But I'm glad I read it this week so that I'd be able to see what you were all about. You're wonderful. And any last thoughts for the folks that are going to listen and share this podcast?
I just want to say thank you for listening. I hope perhaps that something I've said or something you read will prompt in you an inspiration, an upliftment in some way. I think that's one of the best things we can do is just help each other along the way.
Exactly. Well, thank you so much, Gloria. And our future shows coming up include United States Senator Ron Wyden, who's having a voice for trafficked victims. And
Great.
We also encourage you, if you or someone you know has been a victim of an online modeling website, to drop us a line at info@operationrunway.org, and you can see our task force, operationrunway.org, and see what it's all about, and there's a hotline number attached to that as well. And as I indicated, we are going to end with Gloria's song, You Always Knew, because I believe it's a beautiful song, and if you've walked this journey with somebody that you've shared your history with, share the song with them. It's a beautiful song. So thanks, Gloria, for joining us tonight. And until we meet again, hug your kids. And if you see something, say something. We all can make a difference in this world about the injustices that are occurring around us. Thank you, everyone, and good night. And thanks again, Gloria.
Oh, thank you. It's my pleasure, Michelle. Bye.
Bye-bye.